NHL powered by the Tennessee Lottery, joined now by our man Chris Lowe, who writes about college football and college athletics for ESPN.com. Chris, we were kind of getting into this topic, and sometimes we do. It's always funny how we wind up into it, but Dawn said we have to ask Chris this. You could make five visits. There was a young man who committed to Tennessee, and his visits were just all over the place. And I said, I like that. That's a guy who wants to see the country while he makes his visits. But where are some must-visit places for all those student-athletes out there or all of us who dream of getting those visits? Where are some places where you just have to go?
If you're talking off course, I think you got to go to Pepperdine, right? Don't you have to see Malibu and Pepperdine at some point? Yeah, now maybe not purely from a football perspective, but you talk about a gorgeous place. Notre Dame has always been a magical place for me, just the tradition and to walk through that campus and, especially as it gets colder on up into November and just see the colors and the pageantry, I think is certainly a place that I would go to. And I'm going to preface this by saying I've been to Tennessee many of the times. You'll probably take it for granted, on a fall afternoon, the Vol Navy and everything. So we'll separate Tennessee from this list. I think Washington would be another place. Much like Tennessee, you can get there via the water to the stadium, and depending on when you go, you talk about it, just a great place to be. I think that would certainly be on my list. There's a lot of other places that this is hard to, you're pinning me down here. A lot of other places I would certainly recommend. I don't know that there's a better game day environment if you look at it from the football, and not just the game, but all day long, than going to LSU and Baton Rouge and Tiger State and just being there, just soaking in the sights, the sound, walking through and seeing, the jambalaya being stirred up and all the, and the festive party and just being there in that stadium at night and listening to the crowd would certainly be a place I would like to go. Penn State's another one. Have you ever been to Penn State for a whiteout on a Saturday night? I've been there several times. Well, I say several times, at least three times. Once for the Ohio State game when they beat Ohio State a few years ago, and that is just a special place. It's hard to get to. And it's not easy to get to, and there's really nothing around it. But that day, game day on Penn State's campus, big game, wide out, there's not much like it.
Our friend Gerald McGrath, former Titans linebacker, sends a message. BYU in the winter is amazing. Mm.
You know what? And I'm glad he said that. I have been to BYU. There's not a prettier – let me make sure I say this the right way. I don't know that there's a more majestic backdrop than being there at Lavelle Edwards Stadium and looking. I've been there, but never for a game. I've been there to do some stories. Actually, I was there a few years ago, I guess about 4 or 5 years ago, to do a story. They weren't playing, but I was on campus and got to go up in the press box, and look at the mountains behind the stadium and just sort of envision what it would be like there for a game. I tell you, Utah is another one. You go to Utah, and the backdrop for Utah is unbelievable. I still think the best backdrop and the best venue, especially when the sun sets behind the San Gabriel Mountain, you can't beat the Rose Bowl. It's like a postcard. Now, granted, they play one game, and I'm not talking so much about UCLA games in the Rose Bowl because the stadium's half full. And there's a different dynamic, but the actual Rose Bowl game, and again, watching, I can still hear Keith Jackson talking about the sun and the San Gabriel Mountains. It's unbelievable. I mean, if you're a football junkie and you love that type of thing, you've got to go to at least one Rose Bowl in your life.
Chris Lowe, our guest. I saw the SEC coaches and also coaches in other conferences. Now, Chris, can do some video conferencing and some actual work with their players. It's not a whole lot, but at least it's a start.
Well, it's at least a way, Mickey, to keep your players engaged a little bit and keep your finger on them a little bit, meet with them and talk to them. How's it going? Not just from a football perspective, but how's it going personally? How's it going with your family? here's some things to think about, to work on. Because remember, most, just about everybody, Clemson's the exception. They had 9 days of spring ball. You got a lot of these new players, guys that are redshirt, are going to be redshirt freshmen. They're going to be expected to be big parts of the team, and maybe you give them some stuff to help an offensive install or a defensive install. You can't do workouts with them virtually, you know, that kind of thing. You can send them stuff to do on their own, but you can't sit there and monitor them online. But it's, you're right, it's at least something. It's a start. And I think in most of the coaches I talk to, and I've talked to them from just about every conference all over the country, their biggest concern is having all these kids, especially the Power Five schools that have kids that are spread all over the country, is, you know, being able to sort of engage with them and make sure they're okay and they're doing things, you know, being safe and doing the things they're supposed to do, because they're so used to having them right here, you know, on campus with them, you know, you, the structure and keeping your finger on them. Now all of a sudden everybody's spread all over the country, you know, and it's hard to do that.
Chris Lowe is with us. Chris, obviously the spring athletes did not get to compete for their season. The NCAA had said, you know, that at a later date they would basically vote on this eligibility issue. That is today. So the Division I Council is voting on whether or not the spring athletes can have another year. And there's so much that goes into this for every single school. I know Division II ruled last week that they would grant it spring sport athletes an extra season of eligibility. You expect that to happen here as well. But there's a lot that goes into it, from a who pays, how do schools handle it, all of that. How do you see it all going down?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Dawn. A lot of layers to it. And I think it's a slam dunk that spring athletes will get another year of eligibility. I don't think there's any question that's going to happen. I think what's going to have to happen, though, you're going to have no scholarship limit. You know, there's a scholarship limit now for the different sports. If you're going to give, let's say, every softball player, every baseball player that was a senior the chance to come back, then, you know, clearly you can't have a scholarship limit. I think the dicier question is, do you give winter sports athletes like basketball players, men and women basketball players, who did not complete their seasons and had a chance or were eligible to go to the postseason, do you let them come back? It's a little stickier then, you know, because you're bringing in whole classes, you know, new freshman classes, you know, for all these different sports. Now, I'm sure you guys have seen the news today, the student athlete advisory council has recommended that those athletes in winter sports who still, you know, who did not complete their season, that they do get eligibility back. And I think they're probably more concerned, more so than just relief for another year of eligibility, is housing and food and shelter. And we all forget, and I'm guilty of this too, so many of these kids, the 4 years that they're in school, 3 or 4 years they're in school, they depend on these schools for a place to live, for food. Now all of a sudden they're displaced, they can't go back on campus, they're not able to get meals. The student athlete advisory committee has asked that right away that athletes get emergency funding for food and or housing.
So how are they going to pay for all this? Last Thursday, the NCAA reported that it would distribute just $225 million to its Division I schools. That number should be $600 million. And these universities, big and small, budgetarily live year to year. So that's some cash flow that they'll have to make up. I just, you're right, though. Locker room space, housing. Do you hire more trainers, academic advisors, nutritionists? All of these things are going to cost money. And then we haven't even gotten to the potential of not having a college football season. And at that point, what do we do there?
Yeah, that's Armageddon if that happens. Because, and you guys know this, I mean, football is the engine that drives the entire train. I mean, for all these schools, if there's no football season, if there's a delay in the football season, you have to play a shortened schedule. The money that you're able to generate to pay for additional trainers, for additional, you know, tutoring, for additional, you know, whatever, to support these athletes, I don't know where you get it. I mean, that's a great question. I think these are all answers or all questions that every commissioner, every conference commissioner, every AD, every president, anybody associated with college athletics right now they're churning through their head. Now, all this is speculative. We don't know. You know, I know that in talking to some friends of mine around the country, coaches on coaches' staff, some of these schools already have decided that they probably are going to cancel summer, at least part of summer school. I don't think they've announced it yet, but I know at least one school in the SEC is going to cancel a couple of sessions of summer school. Well, let's just do the math. If you're not going to bring students back, say, until, I don't know, June or the 1st of July, that you can't bring them, it's not safe to bring them back on campus until then. Well, you know darn well they're not going to bring football players back, you know, until June or July. And is it realistic? And I mean, again, I'm just throwing these sort of rhetorical questions out there. Is it realistic to think that you can bring football players back in, say, in July, and then have them get ready in a month to play a whole football season? I don't know a sport just like football where you've been away from the sport for 7 or 8 months, you haven't had any contact, no really football physical activity, and bam, you drop them on campus, you got a month to get ready to go play a football season. You guys tell me, is that realistic?
I guess we're all going. Here's the crazy thing, Chris. Whatever is realistic or whatever might be normal for the next few months, or I don't think any of us know, right?
No, and I think every decision that's made, and this is the one thing I feel very confident about, every decision that's made will be made in the best interest of the kids and the well-being. I mean, no one's going to put anybody at risk, you know, be it being subjected to this virus, being trying to rush kids through to get ready to play a football season. That's not going to happen. And I think all of us who love football, who are jonesing for football, who wants to see football, we need to understand and realize that there's a lot bigger picture out there than just starting football season on time. Yes, football drives so many things, especially in the South. Talk about economies like Knoxville, Tennessee, Gainesville, Florida, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But at the head of that list is making sure it's safe to bring them back, and then there's enough time. You know, I know in talking to Nick Saban a few weeks ago, he said, listen, if this thing flushes out and the medical people say it's okay, maybe we bring them back in June for 14 days and have, say, 2 weeks of OTAs like they do in the NFL to at least get them a taste of what spring practice would have been like, and then you bring them back maybe a little bit earlier in July and start preseason practice a little bit earlier. I mean, I gave you some worst-case scenarios a minute ago. Maybe those are best-case scenarios to get them back and get them healthy and get them ready to play a football season.
Well, maybe they need Commissioner Chris Lowe to help put everything together. Finally get us a commissioner. Maybe it'll be Chris Lowe.
Mickey, the only way you could make me commissioner is if I make Mickey Ryan type of money. There you go. So you say I'm never including you in the Don and Brent type financial category. There's you. I want to make Mickey money to have that job.
Mickey money.
That'd be more like Mickey Mouse money.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, brother.
Absolutely. You guys stay safe. We'll talk soon.
3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. More to come next.
Sudden Service.